Hi everyone, it's Victoria here, and welcome to the podcast. Before we begin, I wanted to let you know about the free courses the Victoria Stillwell Academy has available to enroll in right now for dog geeks like you. Just go to vsdogtrainingacademy.com and click the enroll button, and you'll see the free course options. That's vsdogtrainingacademy.com. See you there. This is a podcast, and of course, most of you can't see me, but for those of you who are going to be watching on YouTube, you can see that I'm wearing my VSPDT shirt. And this is really important because one of our oldest and dearest, not oldest in age, I mean the longest, oh my goodness, she'll kill me, VSPDTs is the wonderful Jo Pei. She is a dog trainer extraordinaire. And for those of you who are lucky enough to live in the UK and lucky enough to watch the Dog Academy, you can see her work her absolute magic on the Dog Academy. Welcome to the podcast, Jo.
Thank you. This is exciting. I don't think I've ever done a podcast before.
I know. Well, welcome. And, you know, you better get used to it because I think you're going to be doing a lot more in the future.
I don't know. Do you know, isn't it funny? After being on TV, I'm still nervous being on a podcast.
I know.
Crazy.
I know. Crazy. Isn't that strange? I mean, I'm the same thing. I think, with television as well, it's not live. I think the live, even though this isn't going out live, we're still not editing. So it's sort of like it is live. And at least with television, you know that that it's not live, unless you're doing live TV, which I know you've had a little bit of experience doing now.
Yes, that was trial by fire as well. Jeez. Yeah. It's and that's very different because, like you say, with TV that's recorded, you know that, you know, I'm quite an emotional person. So if I get a bit over emotional, I'm quite happy to know that someone can edit that out and it's fine. Whereas doing the live TV with this microphone attached to my shirt, and the subject matter was very emotional, and the lady I was on with, I found it very difficult to relate to her, shall we say, let's be polite. And I could feel my heart rate going up, and I'm sat there thinking, what if this microphone can hear my heart? Because it's right here on my chest. And so I'm taking all these deep breaths, and my friends watching thought, oh wow, she's getting really wound up. And I was trying to slow my own heart rate down. So yeah, it's been an interesting 12 months, hasn't it, really?
It really has. Well, we've known each other for a long time. And of course, you're the European coordinator for Victoria Stillwell Academy, VSA. You've been a VSPDT for years, but you have founded an amazing company, Standish Dog Trainer, in Standish, near Manchester, near Wigan, yeah. Manchester. Yeah. And you have built up an incredible business. When did you start? What started you on your journey? For those people, because we do have a lot of dog trainers listening, or people who want to be dog trainers and students, of course, as you know, that are in the course right now, that are excited about beginning their dog training businesses and their journeys. Like, what was your journey?
So I'm quite old.
I'm older than you, Jo, so that makes me very old.
We're more or less the same age, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
I started dog training a very long time ago. When I started dog training, it wasn't something that was something you could learn at university. There were, right back then, this was, I'm talking like 1995, 1996, and we have students who weren't even born then, don't we, on VSA?
We do, which is terrifying.
But at the time, you could do correspondence courses by mail. So I was working an office job and I hated it. I hate being indoors. And I was engaged to be married, and I started doing these correspondence courses. And when my husband and I, or husband-to-be and I, moved into our first house together, there was a boarding kennel down the road. And I'll never forget this wonderful man who owned the boarding kennel, Clive. He allowed me, I asked, could I come at the weekends and just clean kennels and give dogs biscuits and all this kind of thing? And luckily for me, he said yes. And so as well as doing the correspondence courses that I was working on, I got to get my hands on lots and lots of dogs. It was quite a big boarding kennel. It was a really lovely facility, actually, considering the time. The dogs were in kennels as big as stables. There were acres and acres of field to walk them on that were double fenced. I just really looked on, because I wouldn't have known then a good kennel versus, you know, the back end of a donkey or something like that. I wouldn't have had any idea. But Clive was great. And I remember this one day he caught me looking over the stable door at this dog that I had to get out and take for a walk and then clean the kennel. And I looked over and it was a Staffordshire Bull Terrier, quite a big one. And this dog just went boo-loo as soon as I tried to go in. It was snarling at me, barking at me, jumping up and down inside the kennel. And I was like, I didn't know what to do. So I kind of stepped away thinking, I'll let somebody else do that. And Clive was stood right behind me. And he was like, oh, no, no. Oh, no, we don't. Come on. And so he started teaching me. And I learned so much from him. He was wonderful. And by the end, I used to go every Saturday and every Sunday and spend all day with these dogs. And by the end of it, I used to be the person they relied on to get the difficult dogs out of the kennel, because I'd learned how. From there, a job came up. Craig and I lived down south at the time, and a job came up at Hearing Dogs for Deaf People. And I applied. And it was a wonderful interview process. And at the time, Hearing Dogs is based in an Oxfordshire village called Lucknow, and the site was just beautiful. And it was like a dream. And then I got a call to say, no, you didn't make it. And I was like... And then I got another interview. Something happened. I got another interview. And at the time, Anthony Blunt, the director of Hearing Dogs at the time, he's since passed away, sadly, had an interview with him. And he said to me, why should I give you the job? Tell me why. And I said to him, I don't think I've ever been this brave since, but I said to him, because no one else can do this job as well as I can. I want the job so much. No one will do a better job than me. And he went, okay. And then I got a call the next day and they still said no.
So what?
I know. And then a week later, on a Friday night, I got a call from his secretary. And she said, the girl who got the job didn't show. She hasn't showed up all week. You were second on the list. Do you want it? And I was like, oh, God, do I want it? So so that's when I started working with dogs as my job. And I was really lucky because at the time, the other director of the charity was Claire Guest, who now runs Medical Detection Dogs. And Andy Cook, who I think, is he support dogs or something like that, I think?
Yeah, I think so.
And so I got so much in-house training from Claire Guest, which was like, wow. And my job was to be a puppy socialising trainer. So my job was to recruit puppy socializing volunteers to take dogs into their houses. It was to assess dogs for their criteria as a hearing dog and to run puppy classes for them. And I did that job up until I had my children. Stopped work to have my kids. And then I was sat in a doctor's waiting room with one of my, I think it was my youngest. And there were two ladies having a conversation about how the dog was trashing this lady's house. It was ripping her sofa up and it chewed a hole through the wall. And I was sat there with my baby who was pouring on, thinking, I can help her.
Wow.
I can really help her. So as we got called into the doctor's surgery, I said, look, I don't mean to be rude, but I was listening to your conversation and I can help you. I used to work with dogs before I had my children. I think it had been like maybe a 2-year gap. And I'd written down my phone number on a piece of paper and I said, look, this is my phone number. I won't charge you any money, but I really think I can help you. But whatevs. And she phoned me the next day. So I went to her house and I helped her with her dog. And I didn't charge any money or anything like that because I was just going to help this lady with her dog. And she said, oh, you should do this for a job. And I was like, really? She's like, yeah, yeah, you should. And I spoke to my grandma, my gypsy grandma. And she went, oh, don't be ridiculous. Who's going to pay you to train dogs? And I was like, yeah, right. You're right. Ridiculous idea. But Craig, who is my biggest cheerleader, said, do it. Absolutely do it. So I did. I got my insurance and all those things and put a little website up and started doing little one-to-ones in people's homes. And it got busier and busier and busier. And then I kept getting asked, do you do classes? So I found a venue and I opened classes. I thought, well, if I can just do one a week. And it snowballed. And now we have 15 to 18 classes a week. And I've got the lovely Amy working for me. You know Amy. And yeah, and then I met you. And VSPDT happened in VSA. And again, you've been, you know, a great cheerleader for me too, pushing me out of my comfort zone frequently, to the point where you pushed me to TV. And I'm forever grateful, because what a journey. It's been amazing.
There's a reason, though, I wouldn't do that with everybody. You are insanely talented.
Thank you. Thank you. That's really kind.
Yeah. It just, I mean, I just think in everything we have had, I've had the experience of working with you for so long now in the fact that you run our in-person intensives in the UK for students. And we have students coming from all parts of Europe, sometimes even from far away as Asia, coming to the UK as well as the United States to do our in-person intensives for VSA. And that's the chance that I really get to see Jo working, just work her magic as just not just as an amazing teacher, amazing dog trainer, and an amazing teacher, but a great people person. I think that's one of the reasons why I think, you know, people see you on the Dog Academy. They can put their feet up and they can have their cup of tea and they can watch and they know that they're safe, that the dog is safe, and that's the kind of reassurance that you bring to people, not just in your private work, but also on television. So let's fast forward, because I mean, I love the journey, but let's fast forward to the Dog Academy. What has it been like for you to train on television? What are the differences that you see and the baptism of fire that it is to train on television? But what was it like for you, that experience?
I think the first thing I would say is hats off to you, because I had no idea how hard that job is. And until you do it, I think, you know, there are the people watching, the professional dog trainers watching with all the shoulda, coulda, wouldas of what I would have done. Until you are in that situation, even if you've trained dogs for as long as you and I have, which is 25 years plus, nothing can prepare you for that. The time pressure and not being in your own comfort zone of your own training room or your own training venue, or so that on its own is quite difficult. I'm someone who's quite self-conscious, so the thought of being on TV was quite scary for me too. The reason I wanted to do it was because I strongly believe that the message of kind, positive dog training needs to be shared with as many people as possible. And I think the results need to be witnessed. And for me, TV is the way to do that. It's how to get our message across. And in the first instance, I think the first couple of days of filming, for me, I felt very self-conscious. I felt very nervous. I doubted myself quite a lot. And I don't know if you found this, but actually, as soon as I got in the room with the dog, all of that just melts away, because you've just got the dog. And then you start your detective work and your problem solving, and you try a bit of this and you try a bit of that. And then everything else fades away, because you're just so intent on that little person in front of you, or that big person, depending on the dog. But actually what was lovely was everything else faded away. And I think we were probably very lucky with the company, the media company that we work with, that they really helped us. And I think they made that journey for me probably a lot easier than other people have had it. But as soon as you're with the dog, you just do your job, don't you?
You do. That's, I always say that I don't really enjoy the process of filming the actual stuff around it. I don't. I do. I love working with the crews. I've had amazing crews over the years. I love working, you know, meeting families and, of course, the dogs. The all the sort of the pickups and the this and the that and the entrances and the, you know, all of that filming minutiae to, that you have to do to tell the story is something I don't really enjoy. But when I start working with the dogs and you're focused on teaching that dog something or you're problem solving, that, of course, you're absolutely right. Everything melts away and you're doing what you love to do. And the fact that somebody's filming you sometimes now, I mean, I'm to the point where after, and I can't believe I'm even saying this, 150 episodes of It's Me or the Dog, I almost forget, I just forget they're there. And especially the guys that are my crew right now are very, you know, we've all worked with each other for so long. It's like a sort of well-oiled machine that everybody knows what they're doing. And so I truly can just focus on the dog. But I think the Dog Academy for me is something different because, of course, we're not going into homes on the Dog Academy, right? We are taking the dog out from its normal environment. They're coming to this gorgeous place, but they're still coming to this totally new place where they're being meeting a whole load of strangers with strange equipment, and they're supposed to learn and we're supposed to teach them. And that's why I think why the job is so hard is as you say, it's not so much the actual training of the dog, because even though that is hard because we have to do so much in such a short amount of time, it's that we have to create an environment where the dog is relaxed enough to be able to learn.
Absolutely.
That is most of the job. And I don't think people, I think people who kind of maybe comment for good or for worse, for good or for bad, but they don't understand that. They don't, they have no idea.
No. And that's what I mean with the shoulda, coulda, woulda. It's like, yeah, yeah. We like, we make a training plan, don't we? We make a training plan. And as all dog trainers do, we adapt at the time, but the level of adaptation needed is on a whole new level. The thing that surprised me actually was the dogs. So there were some dogs that we couldn't help in that environment. And maybe that happens with It's Me or the Dog, I don't know. And hopefully we're allowed to have this conversation. But there are some dogs that in that environment are not set up well to learn, and we can't help them on that day or that series of days. And I think the thing to note is that all of the dogs we work with get follow-up with us.
Yes.
I think that's really important that people understand that. It's not they get this little bit of time and that's it forgotten. There are many of those clients that we're still in touch with. Maya, for example, Maya's mum and dad message me all the time, not because anything's wrong, because actually everything is right and they've had lots of backup training. So,
and for those of you who've been watching the Dog Academy, Maya is the dog that attacked, I would say, attacked when she was in her crate and attacked anytime the windscreen wiper was on in the car or in a car behind. So she, when she was traveling in the car and it was raining, the windscreen wipers, I mean, this dog went full out. She wanted to get those windscreen wipers.
Yes, we did.
And And so it wasn't just in their car.
Oh, no.
You know, putting a dog in a crate with a blanket over and everything, that didn't stop her, because even though she might not have been able to see it, she certainly heard it, which of course was the reason why. But yes, so carry on about my,
I mean, they've all had follow-up. So I think that's something that's important to note. But, and there were some dogs we couldn't help on the day. And I think the important thing to note is those dogs also got help. We followed up with those dogs too. But the thing that really amazed me and surprised me was quite often you or I or Adam or Nancy or, you know, all the team would go, I don't think I'm going to be able to train the dog to do this because this environment is not right. And then those dogs, they just, they were so, I don't know what the word is. They tried so hard and they were so resilient. I don't know what the right
word
is.
They were so resilient. I think you're right. I think they just adapted. And we really try and create an environment of safety there where they feel safe. And I think it was with most of the dogs that worked. So they were able just to go. And I think some of the dogs were almost like, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Maya being case in point.
Wow.
But they were all like that, weren't they? If you think of, I mean, you and Adam had so many aggressive dogs to deal with.
Yeah. We did. And some of them, I mean, because we film actually more than you see. And so we film more cases than you see. And so we, Adam and I seem to get a lot of the resource garters. And when you see the fact that the people who love their dogs, I mean, they wouldn't bring them to the dog academy if they didn't love them and they wanted to make things work. But it truly was when you see the light bulb go off in these people and they finally realize, oh my gosh, I was thinking one thing, but actually my dog is feeling another. And that change, and it's almost like the dog looks at them, goes, when they reunited, what are you doing? You've never done that before.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the magic. And you're filming it and you're seeing it play out in real time.
And it's emotional. It's so emotional.
Isn't it just?
So, yeah. Goosebumps thinking about it. It's like when the person goes, oh, and that reunited moment and the dog looks at them and goes, oh, you get it now.
Yeah.
Oh, thank goodness. About time. And it's, yeah.
I think we had that with Adam and I had that with Bear, and Bear was a cockapoo. Was it a cockapoo or cat? I don't know. It was a mixture of stuff, cockapoo. But he was, I mean, he had an unbelievably hard mouthing problem where he did not stop mouthing. And in fact, he was playing, but a big resource guarder as well, where he meant business. He would bite you. If you went near his toy or if he'd taken something and you tried to get it off him, he would bite, he would attack you. And so, but it was trying to get the couple A, on the same page, but to understand from each other's point of view what they were doing with the dog and how that was impacting the dog and how confused Bear was. And he just was so confused. And that was his way of communicating, was this frenzied hard mouthing, because he couldn't get them to understand him any other way. But when they finally realized what was going on and they changed their behavior and we taught Bear different ways to communicate, it was poetry in motion, changed their lives. Can you change a dog and a family's life, 3, 4, 5 hours at the dog academy? Yes.
Yes.
Others, yes. Can you just set them on the launch pad to success? Yes. Because that's how I see it too. I see it as a launch pad. I see some of it's me or the dog, where I have a tiny bit more time with the dogs, but not much more, as a launch pad to understanding. That's how I see it.
Yes. You can't, with a lot of the dogs that we saw, the problems have been ongoing for a really long time. So to expect those to change completely in such a short space of time is just unrealistic. But in that short space of time, you can put many management strategies and start to train new behaviours that will definitely put you on that launch pad and will make change from that day forward. Maybe not the whole journey, but certainly there will be change from that day forward. And I think that's really important for people to understand as well.
I've had Andrew Hale on the podcast a lot, and I love talking with Andrew. And of course, you know him very well, but he always uses this word relief. And I think that's what we bring, is relief to people, even if they're like, oh my gosh, I didn't think that my dog was doing it because of that, and now I feel really bad. It's still a relief to them. They know, and now they know what to do. But it's a relief for the dogs as well. We are providing that relief and that understanding. And of course, at VSA, we teach our students, you know, we sort of see it as the trainers are the bridge, and we've got dog's needs on one side, dog and their needs on one side, and people and their needs on the other. And we are responsible in sort of providing that bridge between them. And that's all we're doing at the Dog Academy, isn't it? That's all we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you use the word, we're responsible for that. And it's a big responsibility that shouldn't be taken lightly. You know, when you go into someone's home, or you are on, as we have been lucky enough to be, on a TV show where you can share the message with so many more people, it's a huge responsibility, and it should be treated with the respect it deserves, I think, is as our profession. We do change people's lives, but if we don't listen to the people and the dogs carefully, we could also be responsible for making things worse. So it's something that should be treated very respectfully, I think.
Yeah, no pressure. No pressure. Oh, my goodness. All right. So, well, we're going to take a short break, but after the break, I want to talk about what it is like living with a timid dog, a dog that has a lot of challenges. And you know that very well, because of course your beautiful border collie Twist. And I think the information that you'll be able to give people who live with dogs that have similar challenges will be really, really valuable. So guys, we will be back very shortly. Are you a dog trainer looking to take your knowledge and skills to the highest level? Or maybe you're a dog guardian interested in figuring out whether your love of dogs can translate into more of a career than a hobby? Or are you already working in the pet industry but recognize that you need to fill some gaps when it comes to how to manage dog behavior so that you can better serve your existing clients? No matter where you are on your journey, the Victoria Stillwell Academy has courses that can help you get to where you want to go. From our free Building Your Dog's Confidence starter course, to the powerful Fundamentals of Dog Training and Behavior course, all the way up to our flagship Professional Dog Trainer course, we have options for every skill level and budget. All you have to do is be passionate about giving dogs the best lives possible. All of our courses are available online anywhere around the world 24/7. No gimmicky sales tactics where you need to act within a certain window to enroll. My amazing team at the Victoria Stillwell Academy understands that we need to be ready to serve you whenever the time is right for you to make the jump. Whether that means dipping your toes into our free courses or realizing your fullest professional dog training dream by enrolling in the Dog Trainer course. So, join the thousands of dog geeks like you that are a part of our amazing and supportive VSA family today. We have academy specialists available to talk with you and figure out how we can help you reach your dog training goals, or you can enroll in a starter course for free right now. The Victoria Stillwell Academy. It's the future of dog training. All right, everybody. I am back with Joe Pay, and we are talking all things dog training, which, of course, I absolutely love. I want to sort of pivot a little bit away from the Dog Academy to talk about Twist and what it is like living with a dog that has certain challenges. And of course, I think you were, okay, we will go back to the Dog Academy a little bit, but you worked with a dog that had similar issues to Twist, that was quite fearful of people and have found social interaction extremely difficult and was definitely a bite risk. And so you were the perfect person to understand what this family was going through with their border collie. So could you tell us about Twist and about some of the issues that he has and your journey with him?
Yeah. I had a border collie already. You've met my old boy, Indy.
Yes, lovely.
And as he got older, I decided that I'd like another one. So I went back to the same breeder that I got him from. And when I met Twist, he was hiding behind a wheelie bin in the breeder's garden. We had to drag him out by his scruff to be able to see his body, to see how big he was. And he was terrified at that point. And at that point, knowing what we all know as dog trainers, my husband and I got in the car and drove away. And I said, we're not taking that dog because he's going to have problems his whole life. He's very, very frightened of everything. And then a few weeks later, Craig was like, has that puppy got home? And it hadn't. And if we don't take him, who's gonna? So I took him and brought him home. And he was fearful from day one. Genetically, I've learned since, his dad was also a very fearful dog. So genetically, he has tendencies to be that dog anyway. And we know that collies can be very sensitive to sound and movement and those kinds of things. So living in an urban environment can be made quite difficult for them by the busyness of it all. And actually, to begin with, we did really well. We did a lot of training with him. We did a lot of socialization with him, and he was coping very, very well, I thought. We had a chase issue. So we sorted that out. He used to chase everything that moved. Literally everything that moved, from you know, birds to small furries to other dogs to people to bikes to traffic of all shapes and sizes. Everything was a chase game for him. And we did a lot of work on that, and it had done very, very well. He doesn't chase anything anymore. But when he was about 11 months old, he had a growth come up on his face, which my vet had a look at. He was lovely with my vet. I used to take him in every week. He'd play while there were other dogs having an operation. He'd play with the vet's dog. So did my job there as well. He loved the vet's clinic, and my vet is wonderful. But this growth came up in his face, and we thought it might go down. Within 3 weeks, it was massive, and it was interfering with eating, drinking, playing. So it had to be removed. And this is when things changed for him quite dramatically. And when I say that I thought we'd done really well at changing his fear, I think that he was tolerating. I think he was on the edge and he was tolerating things. And when we went in for the op to remove the lump, he was given the pre-med injection and the world just fell to bits. He emptied his bladder. He emptied his bowels. He was absolutely terrified in this place that he'd been comfortable with all along. And I didn't understand it. We had the operation. All was well. And it was not traumatic after that. But he had about 8 stitches in his face. So for 2 or 3 weeks after that, he couldn't meet other dogs, because there was concern about the stitches being damaged and what have you. And from that moment forward, things changed. He became agoraphobic. He didn't want to leave our house. He didn't want to leave our garden. He would desperately try not to go for a walk. He was frightened of any person he'd not met before. He was frightened of any dog he'd not met before. Traffic, instead of something to chase, became something to be frightened of. And things got very, very difficult. And I would say at that point, actually, for me, my relationship with him broke down, because I think I was grieving for the dog that I didn't have. Indy had been amazing. It's like he'd read the book on how to be the perfect pet. And so I thought, well, I'll do that again, because it was so lovely. And this dog, like, Indy came with me to schools and colleges to teach kids. Every agility competition we went to, rally competitions, we were winning at this, and he'd done all his Kennel Club awards, and it was just, and I wanted to do that again. I wanted another wingman to have with me, and this dog wasn't that. And I had gone from being someone who would walk 5 days a week with my friends, with my dogs and their dogs, and it was lovely, to I couldn't walk him with anybody, and I was on my own with this dog. And so there's a grieving period, I think, for people who have dogs that are not what you expect. There's a grieving period for what you don't have. And that's really hard to understand. And I think until you've been through it, you just can't get your head around it, because I can't, still to this day, Twist has improved immeasurably, in my opinion. Still to this day, I could not take him to a pub beer garden. Absolutely not. I can't walk him where there are unpredictable dogs and people. When visitors come to my house, I select the visitors who meet Twist very carefully, and that they will listen to me and they will understand him. So things aren't normal, I would say, but things are better than they were. And I just think it's really important for people who have a fearful dog to cut themselves some slack. And it's okay to feel sad and cry for the dog that you don't have, that you really, really wanted, and this is what you've got instead. That's really tough. And you know, all kinds of things creep up on you. So Twist has never, ever, ever had a problem in a car. But to give you an example of things that emerge as challenges when you've got someone who genetically is just not programmed to cope with the world very well, I changed my vehicle. And when I got my new car, it's the same model as my old car. It's like, it's the same thing, right? It's not. It's just not. And he went in the car. Once we got over the agoraphobia of 5 months walking on my own driveway, to until we could go a bit further, bit further. And we could walk again. I then changed my car, and that reset the world again for Twist. And he wouldn't go in the bag. And I'm not proud to say that I thought, oh, do you know what, he's just being ridiculous. My ego maybe got the better of me. And I said, oh, this is ridiculous. Picked him up because he's not too big, put him in the back of the car, shut the car. I'll go to where he likes to go for a walk, and he'll see, he'll be fine. Oh yes, it's another car, I'm fine. No, wrong. I just flooded him. And it was a big mistake. And the next day, I got his harness and his collar out to go for a walk, and he just ran to the bottom of the garden and sat there shaking. And I was like, oh, I did that. I did that.
Okay. We all make mistakes. We all do it.
Yeah. And so then we spent 4 months training him to go into the back of my new vehicle. And it worked, and I video diaried it, so it's all on my YouTube. But literally, because he's not comfortable around out-of-control people and dogs, he has to be able to go in a car for quality of life for him. He has to be able to, for me to take him to safe places for walking. So this, and vets, you know, vet appointments. So this is, for me, this is a welfare issue. He has to be able to go in a car. So I use desensitization and counter conditioning, and I can tell you it works. The science works. It's great.
Yes.
I trained every day from something like the 24th of November to, it was, I think it was the 18th of 19th of February the following year. I trained 8 to 10 training sessions a day, every single day, except Christmas Day. In that period. And I, as I say, I video diaried all of it. And by the end of that, he jumped into the car willingly. He settled in the car willingly. We went out for a drive. We went far enough that I could carry him home if he wouldn't get back in. But he did get back in, and we haven't looked back since. And now, this is just an example of how well the science works, is now if I leave my car in a 5-acre field open, I can send him 5 acres to go get in that car. And he chooses to, he's at the back of the car on his tiptoes, like, ooh, 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 let me in, let me in, let me in. It's his second favorite place to be apart from home. But that's just an example of silly things. Like, still now, if something comes through the letterbox, he's afraid of it. If I've got a new training jacket with a Velcro pocket and I open the Velcro when he's not expecting it, he's like, the sky's fallen. And, you know, people look at dogs who behave in that way and they say, oh, that dog's been hit. I can tell you this dog has never been hit. But if you just rustle, he's a really silly one. My dogs get snacks of human food. Confession of a dog trainer.
Oh, so do mine. Of course.
We share satsumas every day. It's the thing. My husband has to have gluten-free food, and gluten-free bread is really dry. And so I went to give, there was a little piece of bread left, and I went to give Twist this piece of gluten-free bread. And because it's dry, it just rasped on my thumb skin a little bit. End of the world. He would not eat that bread. He ran to his bed. He sat down. I offered it him, and he's like, no, thank you. And that was it. Game over. So I think important lessons to learn when you have a dog like Twist are that you can't always fix it completely. You just can't. And I have done a huge amount of training with him. I've learned so much. And in that process, the bond that I have with him is probably better than any other soul that I know on the whole planet, to be honest. But you can't always fix it. So my home is managed very carefully for him. His life is managed very carefully for him. The holiday we pick is about where can we take him safely. And I'm really lucky in that all of my family are happy to do that. Everyone is happy to bend their world. And, you know, anyone who meets Twist, once he's your friend, as you have learned, yes, he's your friend forever.
He is.
And I think that helps him a lot, because once you know him, you're like, okay, yeah, I'm willing to change my whole universe for you because you're lovely. But our holidays are picked with him in mind as the number one. Everything else is a nice to have, but it has to be remote. It has to have land to walk him on. I'm very lucky in that I can rent. I've got a wonderful 6-acre field that I can rent from I'm a local landowner that no one else can go on, and I can take him there to walk. And yes, it is boring for me walking around the same field every day, but he absolutely loves it. Doing the same thing every day for him, routine and patterns are so important to him.
So important.
So yeah, living with a dog like Twist is an experience. There are probably, if I'm honest, there are probably things I can do that might make a change, but I think they would be more for my benefit than his. So I chose, after conversations, many conversations with Mihaela, my vet, I chose not to medicate Twist. Because I can manage his life. And I think the medication would give us the wriggle room to train him to be more confident to walk through the streets, to walk where there are off-lead dogs and people that we can't predict. With training alone, Twist will walk past people who don't try to interact with him in the street. He won't bat an eyelid at them. He won't chase anything. The training on that has been so careful that if he sees anything sudden move, he looks at me and sits down. I don't even need to ask him anymore. Dogs in the distance running or walking or playing or barking, he doesn't react to anymore. But he can't cope if they run up to him. He will try and run away. He's a flight risk. So I think medicating, you know, some people would say, well, you know, why haven't you tried that? I thought about it a lot, and I just think the benefits would be more for me than him. So I've chosen not to. If he was a client dog and that client wanted more, then I would recommend veterinary behaviorist and a medication route probably for him. He's very repetitive. He's very compulsive. He used to, when I was on calls, he used to go in a clockwise direction around this room and lick the bottom right-hand corner of that radiator down there. Hmm. You can see what he does now.
Yeah, very different.
His bottom.
Yeah.
So, you know, training has done a lot. It can't fix everything, but this is where we're at. And like vet checks for him, my vet's wonderful with him, and he loves her. So that's covered. I have we call it Twist Village. We have a village of people who can look after him. My veterinary physiotherapist who treats Indy, Twist adores her. People who I need to look after him, we've got in place. So I've got all my bases covered. Could I do more? Possibly. Would it benefit him or me? I feel like me. So now with a dog who's 10 years old, this is where we're at. And I won't do it again. I won't take that scared puppy again. But I also wouldn't be without him. And, you know, dogs like Marvin on the Dog Academy touched my heart very deeply because it allowed me, I understood Laura, his owner. Gosh, I cried so many tears with that lady because I really understood how she felt, and she thought no one in the world did, but I did. So it's given me a huge insight into how it feels for those people. And when you're a dog trainer, you can't be a dog trainer because you love dogs. You have to love dogs, but you have to be a dog trainer because you love people. And I do love people. So I think that he's been really good for me in that he has allowed me to understand those people and be able to reach those people and say, do you know what? It's okay. It's all right. I know how it feels, and it's rubbish. It really is. But actually, it doesn't have to be all rubbish. It can be beautiful as well. And yeah, so that's where we are. He's super smart. He can herd sheep beautifully.
He's an amazing dog. He's an amazing dog. I've met him a few times now. And I think the last time we all came around to watch an episode of the Dog Academy at your house when during an intensive that we were doing. And, you know, he chose, which for me was like, oh my gosh, I'm like, wow, so honored that he chose just to sit in front of me, just to like sit. He put his back right next to me to sit up, almost like he was watching the television too. Yeah, and he wanted me to pet him. And I felt honored. And once he'd finished and he'd had enough, he was able to get up and walk away. But I felt really honored that he said, yeah, I trust you. And I trust you enough to put my back to you to have you touch me.
Yeah.
That in itself was huge. And so I just say all power to you for, sure, we all make mistakes with our dogs. Oh my goodness. We're learning too about how to live with these animals, especially animals that are fearful. And so there's ups and downs. It's like a roller coaster. Mm. But the fact is that you continued to advocate for your dog. You continue to explore. I mean, who knew that getting a new car that's exactly the same model, and, you know, why do you not want to go in there? This is crazy. You're a crazy dog. It's absolutely fine. You're going to be safe. It's fine. When really, yes, it's like, whoa, we have to take a step back and go, yeah, but it smells completely different. He doesn't know it's a Honda whatever. This smells completely different. This is not my place. And I think what really the thing about habits and patterns and predictability for dogs that are fearful are so important. They don't like surprises. I mean, I have a Chihuahua, same thing. She came to me when she was 6 months old with a whole host of issues. She's still not super duper human social. She will bark like crazy when people come in, but I tell her, you'll be all right. And she goes, okay, I have to trust you. But I also advocate for her, and I tell people, please just don't touch her. Just leave her be. And once she's done that, you know, once they've done that, then she comes up to them and says, well, why aren't you paying attention to me? You know, and she's like, hello. And, but I recognize her challenges. She's come a long way. But the other thing that I think really resonates is that whole car story is there's a difference between, or even before the training you've done before, there's a difference between a dog tolerating something. And I see and a dog being comfortable with something. And so I see so many, even in the positive training world, dogs that are just tolerating being trained, or tolerating doing a sport, or tolerating being handled, or they are so unbelievably tolerant. So I think that's what we have to do, both sort of in private practice and also on TV. Is this dog tolerating, enjoying? Is this dog feeling safe and comfortable? Does this dog feel like they have choice? Yeah. Does this, you know, that's all really important. And I do think that that understanding comes with experience.
Yeah, I think it does. And it's very easy, again, to say shoulda, coulda, woulda until you've experienced it. And there's nothing that can prepare you for living with a dog like him. But for the people who have a dog like him, I would say that there is hope out there. There really is. There will be someone who can help you. There will be, and you can make a difference. And having learned from him, and I'm sure there are countless dog trainers like me and like you with Jasmine who have learned from you and I and the others that have made a difference. But it's not for the faint-hearted.
No.
And I don't think anyone should go into taking on a dog like Twist or like Jasmine or like Marvin from the Dog Academy thinking that they're going to be a hero, because you pretty quickly learn that you're not a hero at all. And, you know, thinking that, oh, it's okay because I will be able to do this. That's what I did with the car. Oh, it's okay. I know what I'm doing. And I really didn't. So I just think that when you take a dog into your home, so many people have a big heart and want to rescue dogs that have had a bad start in life. And I think that's admirable. But I think that just make sure you know exactly what you're getting yourself into and that you are prepared for that, because it's not easy. It's not easy at all. Fills your heart so much, but it's not easy. There's plenty of grey hairs and wrinkles associated as well as a big heart.
So when you go and you're picking out a puppy, or, you know, even in the rescue shelter, I think rescue dogs are slightly different because the shelter can be such a stressful environment. But if you're looking for that puppy, then just do be aware of the puppy that hides and doesn't want social interaction and is very fearful. I mean, you know, and of course, because we're dog lovers, our hearts naturally go to that one. But do make sure that you have the knowledge and the time and the understanding that the future could be tricky with a dog like that. And there's plenty of people that will take those kind of dogs on, but you're right, that's not for the faint of heart. Joe, I'm so pleased that we could chat today, and thank you so much for being so honest and sharing your stories with us. It does make a huge difference. And for all our listeners that have these kind of dogs but are, you know, just love to get information, I'm so glad that you are, you know, able to share, but also you're able to share on a massive platform that gets over a million viewers every week.
I'm glad you told me that now and not at the beginning.
And more. Yeah, no, truly does. So, Joe, you're amazing. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And everybody, yes, we are doing a second series of the Dog Academy. So you'll be able to see Joe in action next year. I don't know when they're going to transmit it, but I would assume it will be next year. Anyway, we're going to be filming in the autumn, so that's very exciting. But Joe, if people want to contact you, where would they go?
Your best bet is probably my website. So that's standishdogtrainer.co.uk. But you can find me on social media too. Joe Pay on Facebook or Instagram. And thank you. Thank you for the invite. It's been lovely chatting with you, as always.
I found out even more things about you. It's lovely. I love doing these things because, you know, your whole journey to becoming dog trainer is fascinating. I loved it. So we're always learning. Anyway, it's a pleasure and I'll see you very soon. Take care.
See you soon. Lovely. You too.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to Victoria Stillwell's Positively Podcast. For Victoria's online dog training courses, more information and helpful dog training tips, visit Victoria's official website at positively.com. Get connected on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media as Victoria Stillwell, and follow her on Twitter at Victoria S. Learn to become a professional dog trainer with the Victoria Stillwell Academy at vsdogtrainingacademy.com. And be sure to tune in next time as Victoria helps you and your dog live your best life together. Positively.